Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip. It's the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
I tell you, it's one of those mornings. It's one of those mid-June mornings driving in here. After watching golf for the last 2 days, which I would not call inspiring golf. It's more deflating. It's more demoralizing. But it's fun to see these guys getting beat up a little bit, the best players in the world at the U.S. Open. But it makes you want to play. Makes you want to go hit some balls. Makes you want to go play. And I'm driving in this morning. I drive past minimum of two courses I can think of off the top of my head on my way into work every single day, and the parking lots are already packed. Yeah, guys walking up and, you know, got the shorts and the short sleeves on, even though it's a little brisk this morning, and I'm walking, you know, I see them walking up and, oh, that look good. I'm going to go talk about golf for an hour instead. That's what we're going to do. That's a better use of my time. It probably is. Welcome, 7:04 Saturday morning of U.S. Open weekend. It's Hardy here with the Sports Hub Golf Club. I am going to do everything in my power not to make the mantra and the motif and the whole theme of this show today, it's over. But let me just say from the start, it's over. The U.S. Open is over. It's all done. And this is actually good news. Did you really want to spend 6 hours on your couch today and tomorrow watching shot after shot after shot? You don't need to. I treat this as really good news. I'm gonna make a day of it today. We got a lot of stuff to do. I got stuff around the house. Might catch a little Incredibles 2 later on today. You know, maybe Applebee's. I don't know if we'll have enough time and make a day of it going to the movies. Right? Am I going to be watching the U.S. Open wall-to-wall coverage? No. There's no need. The tournament is over. It's not going to stop us from dissecting it for most of this hour. And we're also going to get a chipping lesson this morning, a much-needed chipping lesson. I love to talk about the full swing and, you know, digging deep and, you know, digging out a few extra yards with the driver and all that stuff. Where do I need help? Where do most of us need help? Where are you going to save the most strokes? Around the green. Chipping. Going to get that from Dan Boisvert at Core Golf coming up, and an accompanying video, which you'll be able to find online. More on that coming up. Well, let's start with 36 holes into this country's championship, the most democratic of championships, the U.S. Open. Anybody can get into this one, McCone. You know what I'm talking about? You get your handicap down there to a damn near unbelievably good level. I don't know what you're doing here when you could be playing golf like that, but if you're really, really, really good, then you can get into a qualifier, and then you can get into another qualifier, and then you can go play in the U.S. Open maybe, like Matt Parziali did, the Brockton firefighter who made the cut. He's the first name we should mention off the bat here today. Let's not save him for the end for the feel-good story. Let's flip this around and reverse it. Matt Parziali, the Brockton firefighter, we captured everyone's imagination first by winning the U.S. Mid-Amateur, which is the amateur championship in the United States for people of a middle age. And I don't mean like, you know, in your 40s middle age, but you're not a youth player, you're not a senior player, the Mid-Amateur, okay? And he got himself an invite to the Masters last year. And it was a great story. A lot of different people, including myself, picked up on it before the Masters. We talked to Matt a couple of times on this program before and after his Masters experience. So while he did not make the cut at the Masters, we talked to him afterward, and he still said, well, I'm getting ready for Shinnecock. Oh, my God, you get to play in the U.S. Open. That's right. Okay. Well, good luck. We'll see what happens. And while some of the best players in the world, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Bubba Watson, are all somewhere else this morning, not at Shinnecock. You know where Matt Parziali is? Getting ready for his third round tee time. Opened with a 74, a 4 over par 74. And in case you haven't been paying that close of attention, Shinnecock is playing to a par 70. A par 70 this week. Which is just stupid. It's a par 90. But these guys are, all right, we're going to set the course up and call it a par 70 this week. Okay. He shot 74 and then a 3 over par 73. Made the cut with a stroke to spare. 8 was the number. Got in at 7 over par, which just goes to show you we weren't all foolish for paying so much attention to Matt. He is proving himself out there. And I don't think this is, you would think after a performance like this, maybe he's rethinking things. I spoke with Matt about this earlier this season. I said, you know, you played some professional golf. You know, you did the mini tour thing. You got out there. You gave it a shot. Any chance? He said, no, I'm completely happy doing what I'm doing. I've left professional golf behind. I regained my amateur status. Joined the fire department in Brockton. I do that. And I play golf. And I'm happy doing that. We'll see if that continues. I don't think anyone is going to begrudge him one way or the other. Because he, by all accounts, is a good guy. And a really solid performance. 74-73 to make the cut. So we'll be able to check in on Matt Parziali over the weekend. And thankfully, it's a good enough story to where he's getting coverage out there on the course and the Fox cameras are paying attention to where he is and what he's doing. And we're getting, you know, occasional look-ins on Matt's round, even though this tournament is over. I said I wasn't going to do this on and on and on, but I can't. I can't help it. I'll tell you why it's over. We'll get to that. Don't worry. Let's do some other halftime check-in stuff here. Thursday was really the awful round. That was the day where he got out there and said, this thing is going to be a joke. I mean, players are out there four putting greens. The false fronts on some of these greens at Shinnecock were not allowing players to get into what I would think a reasonable position to attempt their par and birdie putts because the balls were rolling off the front of these false fronts back into the fairway. And we see it at other courses, but we did see it more than anything. We saw 200 scores posted on various holes of double bogey or worse. 200. Think about that. Not 200 players, but 200 times on those scorecards you saw something as a double bogey or worse. And that just set up to where, I don't mind seeing these guys get beat up, but it also makes for a really long viewing experience, too, when these guys are taking 12, 14 minutes to finish a hole just because they got to hit the ball so many damn times. So the conditions improved after, not so much after Thursday, but I would say after the first wave on Friday, okay? Because as is the custom, they send players off in two waves on both 1 and 10. So the morning wave, you have players teeing off on both 1 or 10. They make their way around the course. Some players finish on 18. Others finish on hole 9. And in the afternoon, they send out two more waves. It was the afternoon wave on Friday where the conditions improved and allowed a couple of players to make some noise out there. Tommy Fleetwood and, lo and behold, defending champion Brooks Koepka went out there and both shot 4 under par 66s. Lest you think that Dustin Johnson is the only guy playing golf out there this week. The defending champ, who I didn't expect to hear hide nor hair from, shot a 66 yesterday, as did Tommy Fleetwood. So that's at absolutely phenomenal golf. And 3 strokes better than what anybody was able to do in the opening round. 4 players shot a 69 on Thursday, which is maybe even a greater accomplishment. Dustin Johnson among them. But the 66s yesterday, all right, that's pretty good. But as is the case with any major championship, and especially at a course with a setup as difficult as Shinnecock, the conversation gets to be about who missed the cut. And that's what everybody wants to know. Who didn't make the cut? So, we'll get into that with the most, I think, biggest surprise, with the most glaring omission from players who do not have a tee time on this Saturday, the third round of a championship, Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth is, we were promised he was among the next. He could be the next. He looked like he was the next guy. Perfect swing, short game, putting. That guy has never seen anything, I'll say 10 feet and in, that I just didn't think he was making. And PGA Tour players do not routinely make 10-footers. They really don't. The make rate on anything beyond 3-4 feet is a lot lower than you would think. It's not 90%. It's not 80%. It's really not. But Jordan Spieth seemed to be the guy who could make all those. And he did rattle off 4 birdies in a row yesterday, 13, 14, 15, 16. So it looked like he's making a push, but he undid it with a double at 10, a few other bogeys. And it was really the 8 over par on the first day that killed him. So only 1 over in yesterday's round. He managed a 71 under more favorable conditions, but 9 over put him 1 over the cut. Jordan Spieth, he shot his proverbial trunk slammer on Thursday. Throw the clubs in the back of the courtesy car, slam the trunk, and get the hell out of there. Problem is, he had to come back yesterday, and even a 71 wasn't enough to keep him in it, so Jordan Spieth gone. Now, Tiger Woods not playing is a big disappointment to a lot of people, but it's not surprising based on the way this course has chewed up so many players, and for a guy who has not played a ton of competitive golf over the past couple of years. And I was happy to see Tiger come to some sense of reality yesterday, because on Thursday he was talking about how well he hit the ball and how good his ball striking was and how good he felt about everything. I'm like, Tiger, you shot a 78. Who are you kidding? Yesterday he went out and shot a 72, but he seemed to come to grips with it. And he said, look, I'm 10 over par. There's nothing good about that. There's no way to polish this turd of a 10 over par performance in the first two rounds of a major and say it's anything other than unacceptable. So he's gone. The other guy at 10 over that stood out to me is Rory McIlroy. And I didn't think McIlroy was going to win this thing. We saw McIlroy with a great chance, and a lot of people thought he was going to do it when we spoke with Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe on Saturday of Masters weekend. She was picking either Rory or, she thought Rory was going to win, and a lot of people did. It's not just her. I'm not calling her out. But to think that he could not do any better than an 80 in his opening round is unfathomable. 80. He shot an even, Rory shot an even par 70 yesterday. He went out and shot an even par 70 and missed the cut by 2 strokes. So Rory and Tiger, both gone. Jordan Spieth, gone. You want to talk about Jason Day? I don't think Jason Day, to me, is no longer in the conversation of these young group of players who are going to take over and replace Tiger Woods in the aggregate. Bubba Watson certainly shows flashes. He wins occasionally, and he gives you something, but uninspired is the only way I could describe Bubba's round. Sergio Garcia. Sergio is the one guy who really did not come back and do anything. He essentially doubled down on his bad day. He put up a 75 in the opener and then a 79 yesterday. On a day where everybody got better, Sergio Garcia got worse. Once again, Sergio, so happy you won the Masters in 2017. Nice to see you. That is the look and the attitude and the scores of a guy who got his one major and now he's content. Thanks. Off into the sunset. He'll be around. He's a great, great player. Great player. He's not winning. He's not winning another major. Guy goes out and posts a 79 on a day when scoring improves. He's got a legit chance at making the cut. He only shot a 75 on the in the opening round. All he got to do is go out there and play in three over, and a day when the conditions are better. Nope, couldn't do it. Sorry, I won my major. I'm all good. But as I said, this thing is over anyway. I'll tell you why Dustin Johnson is going to win this tournament. And it's got a lot more to do with the fact that he's got the lead going into the final 36 holes as players get ready to tee off on moving day at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills. It's all about DJ. We'll talk about him coming up next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Before we get to Dustin Johnson, the guy who's going to win the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills, I want to bring up Ian Poulter's meltdown yesterday. And believe me, I'm not picking on Ian Poulter, although he deserves to be picked on. His $200,000 Ferraris. Somebody had even said that, I believe, after the opening when he had played well in his first round, obviously, with a 69, and had a share of the lead after the first 18 holes. You know, the purse for winning the U.S. Open, it's huge now. It's up over $2 million. Someone said he could buy 10 more Ferraris, which he probably would. But, you know, okay, but Poulter, I give him credit. You know, Ian Poulter sat down with Felger and Maz at the Deutsche Bank a few years ago, and that was not fun. That's not fun for anybody. Ask anybody who's had to sit down and talk as a guest on the Felger and Maserati program. Greg Bedard, Paul Perillo, they'll all tell you it's just misery. But he did it, and they had a good back and forth. You know, Felger doing his typical, oh, it was better when Nicklaus and Watson were dueling down the stretch at Royal Birkdale. Stop it. It's not as good as you remember it, number one. Number two, talk about him, and he wants to talk about the stuff that happened 40 years ago. Anyway, Tim McCone is sitting in here, as you heard him on headlines earlier. He'll be coming up. So you watched precisely one hole of the U.S. Open coverage yesterday, McCone, but man, did you pick a good hole.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you saw Poulter live as it happened.
Just absolutely implode on the eighth hole there. Yeah, nuts.
So it was his 17th. He was one of the guys who teed off on 10, I believe, yesterday.
Yeah.
So it was his second-to-last hole of the day. As you remember it, and we'll kind of go back and forth because I only saw the highlights of that particular hole, he just had a meltdown.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was in. I think he was 3-under at the time, too. I mean, he was right there, and you thought it was going to be him and Dustin Johnson.
3-under par. It was going to be DJ and Ian Poulter in the final pairing today. It was decided. Okay, because he had played very well tee to green. So it started with a bunker shot, which I think he bladed. I think he caught it thin. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Chunked two chips, made triple bogey, back to even par on one hole, 50 feet from the pin. He was in. Get it up and down. Get it up and down out of the bunker, which these guys love. Oh, my God, do they love bunker shots. These lunatics playing at this level. Good players will routinely root for the ball to get in the bunker. Especially, and you know what? I don't blame them at a course like Shinnecock, where you have no idea what your lie is going to be like around these hazards and around a bunker and anywhere off the fairway or green. Get in the bunker. At least I know I'll be able to find the damn ball, and B, these guys are great bunker players. He followed that up with a bogey at 18. So it goes from 3-under to 1-over, from greenside on his 17th hole to holing out on his 18th hole, holes 8 and 9, from 3-under, to 1-over. And yes, it's all over for Ian Poulter. It's all done. Did you like it, though? Did you like seeing somebody? I mean, nothing against Ian Poulter, at least in this, you know, one little microsecond. I don't mind it.
No, I don't mind it either. And it was just, it's honestly, it's weird to see because it wasn't just a triple bogey. It looked like me at like Newton Com on Sunday. You know what I mean? Like it was just bizarre to see a professional golfer hit the shots that he was hitting.
Of course. You don't see that often enough. And I tell you what, if he needs some chipping help, Ian, download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Someone text him, let him know. And listen, coming up here in about 15 more minutes, Dan Boisvert from Core Golf is going to give us a chipping lesson. I'll even tweet out a video showing a great little chipping drill for everybody here coming up in just a few more minutes. But it doesn't matter because Dustin Johnson is going to win the U.S. Open, and here's why. Nick, I'm gonna go with Petruskiewicz.
That's how I got it.
Petruskiewicz from ESPN did a breakdown of this, and I love it. I love it. If you have the lead or a piece of the lead for the past 4 years at the U.S. Open, you win. Last year with Brooks Koepka, he was tied for first after 36 holes. The year before, it was Dustin Johnson, his only major championship. He had the sole possession of the lead after two rounds. He won. Jordan Spieth, the year before that, was tied for first after the first two rounds. He won the U.S. Open. And in 2014, who could forget the storybook tale of Martin Keimer and his win after leading after two rounds? Okay, so there's reason number one why Dustin Johnson is going to win the U.S. Open. Reason number two. This is where it gets a little inside golf, but it speaks to the U.S. Open more than anything else. If you are at least two under par and the only player in the field in red numbers after 36 holes, you win. It shouldn't matter. You know, par is an arbitrary number. This whole over-under is a television invention. Somebody came up with the idea many, many years ago of listing the golfers in relation to par to give you a better sense of where they are overall score-wise, tournament-wise. You know, if you're not playing match play, how do you know how everybody is stacking up against each other? You can't add up all the scores day after day and just, you know, keep this running tally. It's in relation to par. So par is, for every purpose, an arbitrary number. It doesn't matter what you are in relation to par. How many strokes did it take you to get from the first hole on Thursday into the cup on 18 on Sunday? Count them all up. Whoever did it the least amount of times wins. But in order to keep it in some kind of perspective, we do it in relation to par. So again, using that as a barometer, if you're at least two under par and you're the only guy under par after 36 holes, you win. It happened with Gary Player back in 74. It happened to Tony Jacklin in the 70s. It happened to Andy North in 1978. They were the only guys under par. And you have to be at least two under. And that's where Dustin Johnson finds himself going into the third round today. He's at four under par. Next closest players are Scott Piercy and Charlie Hoffman. They're four strokes off the lead. They're both even. All right, so there you go. That's reason number two why DJ wins. Also, if you're up four shots at the U.S. Open, you're going to win. The only time it didn't happen was Tom McNamara, and that was in 1909. the miracle at the country club with Francis Ouimet.
Who could forget?
Yeah, would not happen for four more years. I drove by the statue of Francis this morning at the Brookline Golf Course. He's out there, encased in bronze for all eternity. But it doesn't happen. Once again, if you're up four shots after 36 holes, you win. Like Martin Keimer in 2014, like Rory in 2011, Tiger in 2000, everybody else you can think of. Dustin Johnson this year, he's up four strokes after two rounds. He is going to win. Nobody has the game to catch it. Nobody has the game to put together a lengthy run and also have Dustin Johnson fall off enough. I tell you who might as an outside chance, just an outside chance, and that's Charlie Hoffman. Charlie Hoffman, Deutsche Bank winner from a few years ago, nice guy. Until he cut his hair, he was the Chris Griffin of the PGA Tour. You look at Charlie Hoffman, tell me it's not Chris from Family Guy. I defy you. That's who he is. Charlie Hoffman's 4 strokes off the lead, and he's trending in the right direction, like just about every player in the field. 71 on the first day, not bad, 1 over par. 69 in the second round, he improved by 2 strokes, got himself to even, and that is the best chance. Scott Piercy, nice guy. Glad you're still hanging in there. Scott Piercy ain't doing anything against Dustin Johnson this weekend. Charlie Hoffman's got a shot. It's not going to be Tommy Fleetwood. Henrik Stenson's 5 strokes off the lead, as is Justin Rose, defending champ Brooks Koepka, and Ian Poulter. But after what we saw from Ian yesterday, that ain't going to happen. And Brooks Koepka, by the way, where has he been since he won the U.S. Open last year? I don't think it's going to happen for Brooks Koepka again. Brooks Koepka, Curtis Strange. You know, you really mention them in the same breath as back-to-back U.S. Open champions? I don't think so. I would love for Ricky Fowler to be in the discussion, but he's 6 strokes off the lead. Ricky Fowler will break through and win a major championship, but it's not going to be this weekend. It's going to be Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson will be standing alone on Sunday. Wow, I am doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on this. Dustin Johnson better win this thing, but don't worry, he's going to. He's got a 4-stroke lead. He's the only player under par, and he's going to win the U.S. Open. We'll get the headlines here from Tim McCone. We're going to get our chipping lesson, which Ian Poulter certainly could have used yesterday. Dan Boisvert is the director of instruction at Core Golf. He's going to help us out around the greens. I will tweet out an accompanying video here in a few seconds. At Hardy985 on Twitter. You'll be able to find it on our other platforms as well, our other social media sites, 985thesportshub.com and whatnot. All coming up after Tim McCone's Hub Headlines.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub Golf Club. This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Time for another lesson from the guys at Core Golf, 218 Speen Street in Natick. I'm here with the director of instruction, Dan Boisvert. Dan, thanks for being back on the show, and thanks for having us out here again.
I'm happy to have you guys. We're primed up and ready for the golf season at Core, so.
Well, you know, everybody wants to come out and hit balls, but when I came out here, I don't know when it was, earlier this spring, yep. You and I did a short game lesson, which was so good for me in my game, and I feel like, A, if people had a chance to practice it, they would do a lot more with it. And B, it does wonders for the rest of your game. And that's what you have here at Core. These two beautiful greens back here in the secondary practice area with all different kinds of places to pitch from and chip from. And it looks like you've got a chipping drill set up for us today.
Yeah, so something that I focus a lot of my attention on when I'm teaching people how to chip and pitch is contact. You can't really worry about where the ball is going to go, how it's going to react if you're not controlling impact. So for a lot of people, it's subconscious whether you're falling back to try to physically help the ball in the air or you're stabbing at the ball with a very descending angle of attack. So again, you know, for me, it's trying to create the simplest way to work on improving your contact so then you can worry about the other factors in chipping and pitching.
Okay, so contact is where it's at. You and I worked before about actually getting the sole of the club into the right position so that you could use the club to its full advantage. But let's say I've mastered that. So now we're going to move on to some actual drills here. I see on the green in front of us, and you'll be able to see these videos up on our website and through my Twitter at Hardy985. You've got 2 6-foot diameter circles, it looks like. One around a hole and one about midway between us and the hole. I would say about 10 feet from here. What's going on with those?
Yeah, so the two things that matter most when you're chipping is, you know, number one, contact, but number two, landing area. If you control how solid you hit the ball and you control where the ball lands, you would be very surprised with where the ball will finish.
Now, but before we go much further here, are you trying to imply that I go and practice my chipping and only look at the hole and have no care in the world about where I'm actually landing the ball?
You'd be shocked how many people are out there just trying to slam dunk their chip shots.
I don't even think about it. I think, well, the hole's about there. I'm going to need to hit it about that far. It's where the ball lands that determines how far it's going to go. So you're simplifying the process. Yes, you want to be on the right line, but where do you want the ball to land? And that will determine where it ends up.
Exactly. And then obviously it's based off of loft. So if you have more loft, your landing area essentially has to get a little closer to the hole. If you have less loft, your landing area gets closer to you. So controlling loft and contact will allow you to control rollout. So if you can control that factor, then it's just a matter of understanding and assessing your lie and picking the most appropriate shot for the flag that you're hitting to.
So you've got these two circles around the practice green right here. You've got the one circle, the six-foot circle around the hole, and the six-foot circle in the landing area about 10 feet from where we are. What is the margin for error in landing it in that first circle? If I land it on the near side of the circle, does that mean I'm going to end up on the near side of the circle around the hole, or does the wiggle room increase or decrease based on landing area versus where the ball ends up?
That's a kind of a tough one because it more so matters on how solid the ball struck.
Yeah.
So if I hit a perfectly struck ball that lands in the middle of that ring, it's going to end up somewhere close to the center of the hole.
Okay.
Where if I land one a little short, it could be because I caught it a couple grooves too high on the face. So there's a chance that ball is going to spin more, land softer, doesn't even get
exactly to the ring that we're going in. Gotcha.
So that's why, you know, for me, the bigger factor is how solid are you hitting your shots.
So what do we have the rings out here for?
The rings are out here to give us some feedback because what happens with most people is they don't understand when they hit a short chip shot with their 56 degree. They don't understand how much the ball rolls out.
See, I'm all enamored with the toys, and yeah. I keep forgetting that we're actually talking about contact. Okay, so how do we make solid contact on our chip shots?
So one drill that I personally am a big fan of is, and it helps to eliminate the body falling back, the hands scooping, you trying to help the ball up into the air. So what I'll have my students do is they'll start with their feet relatively narrow, about 6 inches between the 2 feet. They're going to pick up their right foot, and they're going to put their right toe down into the ground, which when you do that, you'll notice a lot of your weight goes into your left leg, and you'll feel that your chest actually shifts a little more over the ball. So what this drill does is it kind of stacks you up on your lead side, and it helps you to feel the pivot a little bit more efficiently rather than getting too wide, just making a long backswing, falling back, decelerating, stabbing the leading edge into the ground, or trying to hold on to the face and blading it across the green and hitting your buddy in the shin.
Now, sometimes when you're doing these wacky drills and you've got your right toe behind you and pointed straight at the ground, you end up hitting really good shots throughout the course of that drill. What's to prevent somebody, other than looking really foolish, from using that type of stance or those types of mechanics when they actually go play?
Well, with some people, it's just stubbornness. You know, they're like, oh, I would never hit a shot with my right foot, my toe in the ground. Well, yeah, but I'm trying to create a feel. Like, I'm trying to give you a sensation for something opposite of what you're used to doing.
And as good as it might feel during the drill, it's going to feel better when you've literally got both feet 100%. On the ground and you're just utilizing that feeling as opposed to forcing yourself into it.
Exactly. You have to, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is, like, when you're making changes with the golf swing, sometimes you have to feel a little uncomfortable initially. Because if you just go to what feels comfortable for you, you're going to fall back into all your old habits. So it's, you know, it's critical to go through that area of growth when you're trying to learn a new move.
Anything else that we should be focusing on when we're trying to make solid contact with our chips?
Well, when you start to do this drill initially, I wouldn't want you to worry about anything other than contact, because this drill is to primarily help you pick the ball a little cleaner, catch it a little bit more solid so you can create more friction and get that ball to react the right way with the wedge. Once you've gotten control over that, then we kind of break down into doing some drills where we're putting what we did into play. So we're putting a little bit of pressure on it, whether I'm, you know, trying to hit 10 balls and see how many I can land inside my landing area and finish inside my finishing circle. But there's a lot of ways you can get creative with this. You can, you know, me personally, I go out and I try to beat my record from the day before.
All right. If you want to see what this looks like in action, check out our website, 985thesportshub.com. You can also access it through the app or even through my Twitter at Hardy985. You'll see Dan Boisvert demonstrating the drill, and you can see a lot more of him and all the other instructors if you make it out to Core Golf, 218 Speen Street in Natick, where they got this beautiful practice facility and a place where you can work on every shot in the bag, including these chips around the green. Dan, thanks for the time.
Thanks for coming out.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
Back to wrap things up here in the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's time for our 19th hole presented by Deep Eddy Vodka, authentic American vodka made in the heart of Texas. Deep Eddy Distilling Company, Austin, Texas. 40% alcohol by volume. Please day drink responsibly. This one is a suggestion, one I had thought of before, from Marshall Hook, who will be taking over here at 8 o'clock this morning alongside Mike Flynn, is the Vine Ripe Grill. This is our featured 19th hole of the week. A Vine Ripe Grill, if you're looking for it, you're gonna be told it's at the Robert T. Lynch Municipal Golf Course, and you're going to say, huh? Then someone will tell you the Brookline Golf Course, which might even make you say, huh? If I say Putterham, then you're going to know what I'm talking about. For years, it was known as Putterham. It's the one I drove past this morning I was telling you about with the statue. I drive past it every day, sometimes twice a day. The statue of Francis we met out front, it is right next. It actually shares a, I almost said a border wall, which for all intents and purposes, it might as well be a border wall with the country club. It abuts the country club, but that is a universe away. But I've spent a lot of time at the Brookline Golf Course because of its proximity, its driving range. It's a great staff there. My daughter played PGA Junior League there last season. And the Vine Ripe Grill is a great spot to go in for your 19th hole. And according to Marshall Hook, they have an entire selection of hot sauces. Is that why you wanted to do the Vine Ripe Grill today? Hold on a second. We got to get your mic on. There it is. Go.
It's on the wall. It's like 17, 18 different sorts. And I shouldn't say just hot sauces, but a variety of sauces to put, steak sauces, you know, sort of vinegary things. Just a whole wall.
Malt vinegars?
Yeah, just a whole wall of different things that you can put on your freshly grilled burger.
Well, they've got good food there, and I know they have some kind of like a slushy machine of some kind, because my daughter got one after, I don't know, I think half of their practice got rained out during PGA Junior League last year. But good food. Vine Ripe Grill, Brookline Golf Course. There you go. There's your 19th hole of the week. Father's Day is tomorrow. And as we could talk about the U.S. Open some more, but haven't I convinced you at this point that it's over? It's over. Dustin Johnson's going to win the U.S. Open. It's all done. So a couple of things. Enjoy your Saturday. If you want to watch the U.S. Open, I'll be watching a good chunk of it, but I'm going to be doing other stuff. And you'll see. After today, Dustin Johnson will still have a lead of two strokes or more, and he's gonna win it tomorrow. So, you know, if you're a dad, spend some time with your kids. If your kids want to watch golf with you, even better. But, you know, feel free to do whatever it is you want this weekend, because DJ is going to win the U.S. Open. And I just want to make, an appeal for anybody purchasing golf-type items for Father's Day. We've talked about this on the show in years past. Please resist the temptation to go buy Dad a new club for Father's Day. It's a wonderful gesture, and you can spend some big money. You're better off putting that money toward a gift card for whatever club you might think Dad might want. Let's say Dad wants the new Callaway Rogue driver, or Dad's had his eye on a Scotty Cameron putter. Okay, putters make nice gifts, right? Do not go and spend $300, $400, $500 on a club that looks nice and like, ooh, that's shiny, and give it to Dad. Because even with putters, the thing that you do now is you get fit for these clubs. I would say even especially putters. You want to make sure you've got the right length, you've got the right lie angle, do you really know if your dad prefers a mallet putter over a blade? Does he like the old school Odyssey two ball putter, or does he like something with a little more fancy pants, some prongs and stuff coming off it? Do you know? If you don't know, don't do it. Find out the exact amount of the club you think you might want. Get a gift card, take a picture of it, and say, here, Dad, go pick out your own. That's half the fun of getting a new club. Shopping for it. Getting in the bay over at Golfer's Warehouse or Golf Galaxy or wherever you're going to go and shop for your clubs. And hit a bunch of them. I was talking with somebody just the other... Oh, you know who it was? It was Phil Perry from NBC Sports. And he asked me, what club should I go get? And I said, I have no idea. Go into a golf shop and say, I want a new driver. And this is what they do all day, every day. All right, let's take a look. Start hitting some clubs. See what your launch angle is. See what your exit velocity is there, JD. Let's take a look at some stuff. may not be the one that you think you wanted at all after you hit a few. If you get a club for dad, a lot of these places have really good return policies anyway, so it's okay, but just save yourself the trouble and let dad go on and have that, you know, little discovery experience for himself. If you are one of these people who insist on getting an actual item, Marshall, looks like you have something you want to say on this.
No, keep going.
If you want to get him an actual item, I suggest something along the lines of an accessory, and no, I don't mean a novelty head cover. Although those can be fun.
Maybe a lovely form-fitting shirt, bold colors and horizontal stripes.
No.
Might be nice.
Range finder.
Oh.
I used to get made fun of for my Gadget Dick Tracy watch.
Yeah.
The GPS watch that I picked up at the old Golfsmith there in Watertown years ago. And a guy said, Hardy, real players use, you know, Bushnell, like laser finders, you know, they kind of hold up and point. I said, yes, but I'm not a real player. I don't need to know if I'm 200.1 yards away or 202 yards exactly. I need to know about, am I 150 or am I 250? And first of all, these yardage finders on watches are unbelievably accurate. And when I play golf with quote unquote good players, practically every time I play, I'm playing with guys who are much better than me, and they often have laser finders and stuff. You know what they're doing? 2-3 holes into the round. Hey, Hardy, what's your little gadget watch say? Oh, I thought it was a piece of crap that you were making fun of me for. Well, according to my silly little watch, we're 141 yards from the front of the green, we're 152 to the middle, and 163 to the back edge. And when they shoot it with their laser finder that costs 2-3 times as much, they get the exact same number.
You seem very upset by that.
Well, suck on that. And the watches look cool, too. So there you go. You want to get dad something, get him a GPS watch. He'll love it. Scott is on line one for us here. Scott, go ahead. You're on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
My God, all you do is say blah, 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 blah. This thing, that thing.
Oh, hi, Zoe. Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, I went into one of these golf shops, and I said, hey, I need a new driver. So the guy goes, come on, it takes me to this other room. I walk in there. There's 10 guys lined up in black suits with black ties and a top hat. This guy drives a Lexus. This guy drives a thing. He says, you pick one of your drivers.
Unbelievable. That's okay.
D's nuts.
Yeah.
D's nuts.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this edition of the Sports Hub Golf Club. I'd like to thank my guest, Dan Boisvert, Director of Instruction, Core Golf. I'd like to thank Dustin Johnson for winning the U.S. Open, which he'll be doing tomorrow, and giving me the opportunity to spend time doing other things this weekend. I will not be glued to the television for 6 hours today and six more tomorrow.
I'm cleaning out the garage today.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to tuck right into that sucker.
I've got some smoke and carbon monoxide. No issues, but it's a long story. But I've got some replacing to do.
Oh, that sounds fun! You got to get the modern ones. You can't go with the old style.
Oh, I haven't. I
need the laser emboldened.
I've got a 19-page manual. Is exactly what kind need to be in the home.
Yeah,
so I'll be taking care of that today and a bunch of other stuff. So you enjoy your time here with Mike Flynn, Marshall Hook.
I will. I mean, who would not enjoy 3 hours sitting with Michael Flynn and Tim McKenna?